This free program is paid for by the listener sponsors of WORT, Community Radio in Madison, Wisconsin. If you haven't already, please consider donating online to help keep Radio of the Free alive.
WORT's independent local news at 6:30 Monday through Thursday. Our reporters tonight were Harry Richardson, K.P. Whaley, Natasha Anderson, Elizabeth Goers, M.J. LaPlay, Norm Stockwell, and Leah Zeldin. Our hosts were Abby Scott and Brian Gall. And our on-air engineer was Adam Rose. Joanne Thrax was the producer of tonight's program. Special thanks to all of our listeners. I'm Aaron Sommerfeld.
And I'm Aaron Romans. In Our Backyard has immediate openings for reporters. Give us a call at 256-2001. Stay tuned next for the Access Hour. Until then, good night.
Welcome to the Access Hour, where each week we offer you the opportunity to take command of the airwaves. Everyone is invited to submit their program ideas by calling the station at 256-2001. Do it now during the show or during normal business hours. We'd like this show to be as unpredictable as possible, so we need your creative ideas. It's a fair trade. You give us your muse, and we give you the facilities and any help you need to get your show airborne. So get those synapses firing, and when the inspiration for some phenomenal radio lights your creative bulb, pick up the phone and call us. Right now, it's time to begin another foray into the freest form program on the WORT schedule, the Access Hour.
Listening to WORT 89.9 FM in Madison, Wisconsin. Listener sponsored community radio, and I do have to emphasize listener sponsored. Stay tuned for the Access Hour. It's coming right up.
Thank you. Good evening, folks, and thanks for tuning in to the Access Hour. We have a special program to bring you tonight, but before we get started with that, we hope that you'll give us a call and show your support for the Access Hour, the most open, free-form radio show that our community radio station has to offer. And you can help support us by calling right now at 256-2001. You can be the first to call tonight and support this wonderful free speech program. Before we get started, I'd like to send a special thank you out to our phone answerers who are having a great time talking amongst themselves tonight. They would love to talk to you. That's Ashley, Basha, and Graham. They're great. Dave, the receptionist, will answer your phone call. And we've also all have wonderful full stomachs from Doban. We had really great food tonight. You missed that. Oh, so we have such great volunteers that support this radio station and the show, and we really want to thank them. And you can thank them and show your support by giving us a call at 256-2001. Or I know that there are some people that are streaming online right now, so if you're hearing us through the internet, you can go to www.wort-fm.org, and you can make your secure pledge online.
I think you click on a piggy bank.
Oh, click on the piggy bank.
Something like that. Anyway, please call us, 256-2001 or 1-866-899-WORT, W-O-R-T, which is 9678. And I just wanted to say before we get into the program today that this program, the Access Hour, we know it has nobody that people can attach to week after week, like a music program or a special. We don't have a collective. We just have a phantom that runs the program and a different person doing a program every week. And I'm the phantom, and so I speak out now as Phantom Lee, as I have to, and would really like you to give us a call. We're going to go to a program now, which I'm participating in, as a matter of fact, and then Stacy and I will be back to ask for more money, if you don't mind, or at least maybe we'll ask for our very first money in about 10 or 15 minutes. But we would appreciate it if you could give us a call, 256-2001. There are pledge thank you gifts and things like that we have. The phone answerers are really nice, and they know what they are and should be a problem if you'd like to give us a call and help us out.
Yes, please give. Any level is appreciated, and any level shows your support. So we'd love to see your support tonight. So please call.
It helps the Access Hour to support the schedule, too. Thanks. Okay, let's see here. We'll just crank this up again for a second. All right. So today's program, I'm actually kind of hosting in a way, and I'm not quite as schizophrenic as I think I should be in order to do that. What we're doing is we're conducting the second of a series of three programs by different people to celebrate the 30th anniversary of the Wild Hog in the Woods Coffee House, and that's a real place. It's an independent coffee house that was formed 30 years ago. It was formed as a cooperative, and it's a 501c3, blah, blah, blah. And I have with me people who hopefully are going to be more articulate than me. One is Debbie Kmetz. Hey, Deb.
Hello. Hello.
Thanks. And the other is Michelle Miller.
Hey, Ken.
Hi, Michelle. Thanks. And so we're going to talk about things a little bit. We're going to talk about the coffee house. We're going to talk about the fact that this is International Wisconsin Co-op Month. Is it Wisconsin Co-op Month or National Co-op Month, or is it?
It's at least national.
All right.
Mm-hmm. Yes.
Possibly even continental Co-op Month. So we'll be talking about the coffee house, how it relates to that, and also about co-ops in Wisconsin. And we'll be as celebratory as we can, but every once in a while, Stacy and I are going to have to ask you to help us out. So, first thing I'd like to say is how can we start this? Let's talk about the coffee house itself. How is it organized, and what exactly is it? Can you say that better than I just did?
I can. I hope so. The coffee house is what's most important, I think, to get across immediately is that it's locally based, and it is formed as a cooperative, and the members have the power in the co-op, and it operates once a week on Friday nights. It used to be two nights a week. Now it's once a week. And local musicians, sometimes out-of-town musicians, but local musicians can come. There's a stage. There's a sound engineer to work with them. Audience can come in. And it's basically a listening room. and it's been functioning that way for 30 years.
Is it associated with any organization, any institution, a church, or anything like that?
Well, it's located in the Wilmar Center, and that's its third location. It started out at 604 University Avenue with the Green Lantern Eating Co-op, and then it was at the Brook Street Y, and now it's been at Wilmar for a good long time.
You know what, Deb? And listeners, I have to apologize, but there is somebody else I hope is on the line. Gordy, are you out there?
I am.
Hot damn. I'm sorry, Gordy. Gosh, I went through all the trouble to get Gordy on the phone so we could have him on. And then we just started having our program. And
well,
Gordy,
good to hear y'all.
Thanks a lot. Gordy is in Asheville, North Carolina. And Gordy was one of the original people trying to pull together a group of people that could form a coffee house. Am I correct?
That's right.
And Gordy, when you were involved in this thing, How did the people start to actually pull the idea together or pull the thing together?
Well, it's interesting having talked to you about this program a little bit and remembering 30 years ago, as little as my memory may be, and remembering that there was a number of us, mostly musicians to start with, that thought, geez, wouldn't it be great to have a place where we could all get together and maybe play some music and maybe some people would want to come and listen, and so we did the kind of Madison thing. We said, well, we'll put up some posters around town, and within a very short amount of time, a lot of people came together, and not just people that wanted to play music, but people that wanted to listen to music, people that wanted to support the idea of a place for people in the community to get together, kind of surrounding traditional or acoustic music, and to get together on a regular basis and to do that. And again, as you mentioned about what the coffee house is now, then as well, one of the main focuses or foci was to be local. This was a thing for folks in Madison or the greater Madison community to be able to get together and celebrate together once or twice a week.
So I think one of the things we talked about was why we made the thing cooperatively organized in the first place. And I think, you know, in the past we've been talking a little bit about it. The idea really was to make it, and I think this is a unique thing among music venues or artistic groups, we were trying to avoid having personalities dominate this thing at all.
Mm-hmm. Yeah.
And I think that I remember sitting in living rooms, various people's living rooms in the spring of 1988, and people were sort of grasping with how do we organize it. And part of it was being in Madison, there were co-ops all over the place. I mean, there were housing co-ops, there were eating co-ops, there was a co-op pharmacy, Union Cab was a co-op.
There was a co-op garage.
Yeah, there were co-ops were... they were a way, a very visible way to organize. And I think that the idea of a co-op, which is very egalitarian and self-reliant, really meshed with what people were saying, that you know, we could form a place where people could gather together to entertain themselves and each other in a ways where you didn't need a whole lot of capital, you didn't need to be an empresario and have, you know, a big concert organizing sort of business. You could do it as you know, yourselves as people, and a co-op was a very natural way to go. It's interesting because when people think of co-ops, they often think of marketing co-ops or buying co-ops, but this is in a sense a cultural co-op. I mean, we got together for a service. It happened to be sharing music.
Yeah, and I think probably most of us that were, you know, in those living rooms back then were probably members of some kind of a cooperative organization, whether it was an eating co-op or a garage co-op or a food co-op or whatever. We all, it was a time and a place where that kind of a thing was something that was accepted or understood, at least in small part, by all of us, at least on some level.
And it helped us to plug into the community here in a time when there was a lot of effort to make meaning out of life. We wanted to make sure that there were socially conscious efforts to share information, to bring in people who could share information about social situations that are happening in the United States, to bring in different cultures. We asked people to come in to that would exhibit different cultures, who would talk about them, relate them to us, and also to relate them to how they're managing to live and survive where they were. We had people coming from Louisiana. We had people coming from Canada, from different places that had different life experiences that they were able to share. And doing that cooperatively made it easy for us to promote what we were doing as an information group as well as a music entertainment group.
Yeah,
it sure did. And as I mentioned, since many of us were involved in at least playing music, if not performing it, out, it was the kind of thing where none of us were looking at this as a place that, oh, this is going to be my stepping stone. This is going to be my launching pad. This is going to be my ability to, kind of serve my own interests. This was a chance for us to really serve all of our interests, which was just to get together and to enjoy the kind of diversity that Ken's talking about, and some of the similarities that we all had as well. And it was kind of a special thing in a lot of ways that within a very short amount of time, we had people that were into the co-op because they liked to cook and do baked goods, that they donated their efforts to help the coffee house run. We had other folks that just liked to listen to the music or just to socialize in the situation. We had other folks that were very into the cooperative idea, like Gillum Curley, which we talked about before, who was real instrumental in helping us form the political organization that we ended up forming. And so all these kind of disparate interests got together and realized, geez, we've got something that we like, and one of the things we liked was just getting together as a community.
I think the other another aspect to tie it to co-ops that was very helpful in the beginning, sort of building on what Gordy's saying too, is that we could get together and we could make it viable, partly because we were helped out to a terrific degree by the Green Lantern Eating Co-op. And when we were kind of looking around for how are we going to actually do this in a physical space, we had some friends that belong to the co-op. They happen to also be bartenders at the 602 Club, and they would come
and
into
coffee drinkers at Spudnuts.
Yeah, and so some of us met them at Spudnuts, and we talked to them about possibly having the coffee house as the evening after they ate at the Green Lantern, and they took it to a vote of their membership, and they said yes. And so here was an eating co-op that had been in existence since 1947, and it served two meals a day to its members, Monday through Saturday. And then they ate, I think, at 6 o'clock, and by about 7:30, they were done and cleaning up. And on Thursday and Friday nights, then we would come in, and we would set up our banner and put up quilts and all sorts of things. And so it was Green Lantern by day and Wild Hog on Thursday and Friday nights. But it was a great example of how a co-op helped another co-op.
It was indeed. They are actually the ones, the Wild Hog in the Woods Coffee House, was the name was picked basically just because people were getting together and looking at record albums and trying to find something that would interest them. And I don't know how in the world we ever settled on it, but we thought about it as a pleasant thing rather than a wild boar, or a feral pig. So we really were thinking about pleasant little pigs flying through the air playing violins and blah blah blah. And these guys at the Green Lantern, we never thought about nicknames. We were really not that together that we could think about nicknames. But the Green Lantern Eating Cooperative, I think, gets credit for starting to call everybody Wild Hogs,
yeah,
which was pretty hard to deal with for a long time. So I don't know. I think I'd like to take a break. Not that I'd like to take a break, but I think we need to take a break and tell the listeners that you folks out there that we are in the middle of our fall pledge drive here on WRT. So, Gordy and Debbie and Michelle, if you can hold on, and we'll come back to you.
Thanks.
Thank you. Stacy, are you with me?
I'm here.
There you are. Now you're here.
Yes, and we already have someone to thank. I want to give a special shout out to Harry. He was our first
contributor on the Access Hour tonight. Harry's given to the station before, and we're glad that he's supporting us on a continued level. His favorite shows are In Our Backyard, Third World View, and A Public Affair. And he has a special note for our folks tonight. He says, keep up the good work and remember our history. And that's exactly what we're doing at the Access Hour. This is a wonderful platform that's open to the community where you can sign up and you can take over the airwaves once a week. And it's an amazing gift that WORT gives to the community. And we're hoping that you can call and give your gift at 256-2001. Or you can donate online at WORT-FM.org. And when you call, please ask some of our phone answerers about the amazing premium gifts that you can get for your donation tonight. At the $80 level, I see there are tickets to the Yonder Mountain String Band at the Orpheum Theater. That's coming up on Friday, October 17th at 9 p.m. If you pay by credit card right away at that $80 level, you can check out Yonder Mountain String Band, which I think would be really cool. I bet they would be the kind of band that would hang out at Wild Hog. So please give us a call at 256-2001 and show your support for the Access Hour.
I think, this is the Access Hour. It lasts an hour. And an hour at WRT just to run the place is, and now all of a sudden I've drawn a blank. $70. It's like $70. Thanks, mm-hmm. Stacy. And if you pledge at the $40 level, what you're kind of doing is you're giving us a good, healthy chunk of that $70 that helps us with one show, one out of 365. And we would appreciate that. If we got a bunch of people to pledge just around that regular time, it would be very helpful. But if we could get one or two, I'd feel really good right now because right now we need a call. It's 256-2001.
Yes, the lines are wide open, and we've got some fantastic volunteers who are ready to take your call.
Yeah, they're either just listening to us or they're just chewing fat. Please give us a call, 1-866-899, which is our frequency, and WORT, which is 9678. 1-866-899-WORT if you're out of town, and if you're in town, it's 256-2001. Mm-hmm. And 256-2001 had its own little story here at WORT. When we moved here in 1981, this place was a warehouse, when I came in, I was a little bit behind the curve, and when I came in, they already had tape on the floors to show where the rooms were going to be. And this place was built up by volunteers, by and large, a couple of contractors, and by and large, volunteers, people that didn't know how to do anything. We were here sawing PVC pipe and running cables, and it was really interesting. And then we got this new phone number for this place, and it was 2001, and everybody went, ooh, Space Odyssey, ooh, modern, rich, hotshot stuff. Mm-hmm. I said, no, it's a funky cinder block building with funky cinder block walls on the inside. It's filled with hundreds of volunteers day in and day out, and they are volunteers except for a very small number of paid staff who are not the richest people in town either. And this place goes and goes and goes on what we've got.
But what a great example, too, of how volunteers put in their own sweat equity into this place. Volunteers make it run, and the listener supporters are the people who fund it. And I'm looking right in front of our fearless host right now, and he's looking at a he's looking at a brand new console. There's all kinds of wonderful buttons and gadgets, and this is a brand new sound mixer that we have, and listener sponsors help to make that possible.
The other one was here since we moved.
And I'm so glad that we've upgraded. And so it's a wonderful example of how your investment really keeps WORT going from the very beginning, from raising the foundation here to keeping it going and keeping the show alive. So again, thanks to Harry for his contribution. We hope you can join him. We can go back to remembering our history, but we hope that you can call tonight and invest in WORT's future.
256-2001. Let's hear from you sometime along the way. We won't be bothered at all by that. Please call. Okay.
Could I say something, Ken?
You bet.
I'd like to also say, to just encourage people who are members of co-ops out there to call in a pledge just in honor of co-ops. And in Madison, you could be a member of many, many things. Credit unions and Willie Street Co-op.
Group Health Cooperative.
Yes. Yep. I mean, there's just so many ways that co-ops can and do touch your lives living in Madison and in Wisconsin. So do call in because WORT, in its sort of locally based, community based radio, is on the same page as the co-ops.
Very much so. Mm-hmm. And it's filled with little collectives that are putting programs together, whole groups of people that put together a half an hour program every week. It's a wonderful thing that's happening here, and we need to pull our own weight here at the Access Hour. We are going to raise the money that we need to run this station over the next several days, but a lot of times it's music programs, so please give us a call and support public information programming as well. So I want to get into the whole thing with the coffee house. The Wild Hog in the Woods Coffee House is what we're talking about here, and co-ops in Wisconsin and in Madison. When the coffee house was formed, we incorporated, and if you incorporate, you have to have bylaws, you have to have an executive, you have to have a secretary treasurer. Am I correct about that?
Yes.
And so this coffee house had to do this somehow or another in a cooperative way, and I think somewhere along the way we also made a decision that decisions had to be made by consensus.
Yes.
Yeah. I'm laughing because when we first got together to talk about, well, not first, but as over a fairly long period of time, we're talking about, okay, how is it that we're going to form this thing? And we decided we're going to do it cooperatively, that we wanted everybody who was a part, whether they were running the soundboard or playing music or sitting in the audience or baking goods or just showing up every Friday or Saturday night, we wanted everybody to have an equal say in that whole process and for all the decisions that we made. And so one of the things that we had to have was a chief executive. This was by Wisconsin law, as I remember, as part of our bylaws. And fortunately, one of our members was a lawyer and could help us through all this process. And so we decided, well, we didn't want that person to have virtually any power at all because we wanted to do things by consensus. That is, we all had to talk it out. If we couldn't come to an agreement, we had to keep working until we did come to an agreement. And so we decided that our chief executive would be the Wild Hog, as I remember.
High Hog. High Hog in the Woods.
Oh,
I have the bylaws, Gordy. It says High Hog in the Woods.
The High Hog in the Woods. And the
obviously,
High
we
Hog
didn't
in
want
the
it
Woods
to have too much power.
Was largely a figurehead of sorts, and had no power more than the lowest hog in the woods. As
that's a good way of saying it.
You know, we're laughing about it, but you know, I think it was symbolic and it was very effective. Because I remember once when there was a high hog where it was slightly going to his head. And there was a meeting where he said something as if he was carrying weight. And somebody just said, hey, you're just the high hog.
Well, and functionally what happened is that there were always people that put in more time and energy and got stuff done. But in terms of politically, anyone that was that worked with Wild Hog had an equal voice, and it seems to have worked, because here we are 30 years later with a succession of folks that have come and worked with the coffee house, some like Deb that have been there for 30 years and some like myself that were just there a few years in the beginning and went to other places. But it's pretty darn cool that concept of working towards consensus has really led to a sense of stability over time, as opposed to relying on a particular leader or group of leaders that directed the organization.
I think Gordy makes a really good point. I think the other thing that it's kind of tied in with it is when you're dealing with music, it's easy to fall into a kind of the musicians have a higher status or they have some sort of, I don't know, just a little bit elevated position because they're the ones on stage and everybody else is there so that they can be on stage. But that that I think that the emphasis on consensus and it being a co-op and the egalitarian, the musician status never elevated. And the people running the soundboard, the people baking, the people taking admissions, everybody was on equal footing. And I think that that ended up being a source of great power for the organization itself, because it also filtered out the people who were attracted to it because they wanted to be in charge or they wanted to be stars. They got very little gratification.
So a cooperative by nature helps a larger group of people have power. Is that right, Michelle? Is that a way of saying, or how would you?
Yeah, that's the way I would say it. It's a chance for a group of people to come together and make sure that their needs are met in whatever way they need. Deb and I were talking a little bit about this before, and it's got community control. So, you know, we see the banking system failing all around us, but our credit unions are doing just fine.
Yeah.
There's no problem there.
And group health cooperative.
Well, I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah.
We're doing okay over here in Wisconsin, Gordy.
And in North Carolina in the credit union as well.
There you go. And then the high in Wisconsin, you know, we had different kinds of cooperatives that do different kinds of things. And in Madison, there was seemed like this milieu of cooperatives that Debbie was talking about earlier. But it's really a very strong tradition in Wisconsin itself.
Yes, it is a very strong tradition here. And actually, we can thank the Norwegians who immigrated here in the 1860s for that.
Thank you, Norwegians.
At that time, Norway was experiencing kind of a co-op renaissance. And so a lot of people brought that with them when they got here. And the Norwegian settlers used their communities to create all sorts of different kinds of cooperatives to serve their needs. And then, I don't know, maybe you've got the actual dates on this, but wasn't it in the 30s that the Center for Co-ops started?
I don't know that.
Okay.
For sure.
30 sounds good.
Again, a time of great need. And that was also a time when the electric co-ops started up, thanks to FDR and his foresight and involving farmers in the process of figuring out what they needed to do to improve their rural communities.
And the electric co-ops are interesting because there were utilities, or not utilities, but there were companies that wanted to provide electricity, and they provided it where they could make money.
Right.
So they provided it in the cities and places like that. But when they got to the countryside, it wasn't worth running a pole and a wire out there. And eventually it was the federal government and the Rural Electrification Association that allowed that to happen and allowed people to get electrified out there.
And I have something about that that's really intriguing. The Willie Street Co-op's October newsletter has 3 pages on Co-op Month, and they had this in it, that half of the electrical transmission lines in the country are owned and operated by rural electric co-ops.
Wow.
Right now. Half
in
of them.
In fact, many of the ones here in North Carolina, as well as just over the border, we're very close to the border of East Tennessee, are run by rural electric co-ops as well.
I think the same was true with telephone service. And I keep wondering, when are we going to get a cell phone co-op?
Internet co-op.
Yeah, right. Internet co-op wouldn't be too bad either.
I started buying organic food at Penn State back in the 70s, early 70s, in a food buying co-op. And back then, organic food was a little more expensive, and a food buying co-op was really the way to go.
There was a front page article in the Chicago Tribune earlier this week or late last week about food co-ops starting up now, right now, in Chicago to buy food, basically because of the economic circumstances that we're in. So it's a very current idea.
Well, thanks. I think it's an interesting thing. Oh, and we are in the middle of National Co-op Month, right in the middle of, in October. And it's kind of a nice thing. There's the tobacco pool that operated here in Wisconsin for the longest time. I don't know how strong they are at this point. I'm not that good at, I'm not that well read and all that. But I do remember that there was a group that was trying to form an organic, and I'm sorry to bring up organics again, but they were bringing up an organic production company, and they were trying to figure out how to organize a cooperative of suppliers, and they patterned themselves on the tobacco pool, and they wanted to try to pattern themselves in that same way to get facilities that they could use. You know, you pull your resources in order to get the facilities to use to do what you want to do. At the coffee house, we didn't really do this stuff economically. We were nonprofit. We looked for ways to get money so that we could do what we wanted to do, but by and large, we relied on gifts.
We did, but at the same time, as Deb brought up before, I don't think that community-based organizations such as WART or the Green Lantern Eating Co-op and others, I can't remember the name of the coffee group that helped us out in the beginning. They weren't a co-op, but there were a number of different organizations that saw some value in what we were doing. And part of the value, I think, was the fact that it seemed to be real community-based, that it was cooperative in nature and inclusive by design. And I think there was a lot of support for that kind of a thing from outside organizations. It was a lot easier to go to Green Lantern or WART or whoever and say, hey, we've got this thing going on and this is who we are. And they said, oh, geez, that's the kind of thing we want to support.
And you know, Gordia, that makes me think that WART, where we are right now and doing this program, had a Wild Hog in the Woods radio show once a week for, I think, 7 years. Ken was the programmer for that. But that's exactly what you said. I mean, they offered the coffee house a radio show.
That's right. And offered all kinds of PSAs and other things when we were first starting out to help people know that we were there. And all that kind of stuff was certainly instrumental in at least getting the word out that this organization was there for people that did want to get together and maybe enjoy this this thing that several of us who helped start the thing had already enjoyed.
Does anybody have an estimate on how many people several of us was?
Gosh.
You mean at that very beginning?
Not the very beginning. That was like, you know, a dozen or so. But by the time the coffee house was actually ready to operate, there were a lot of people.
There were a lot of people.
I would guess that when we did the fundraiser, there were probably not more than 20 of us that were involved on a kind of regular basis in organizing things. And as background, we did a fundraiser to try and get some money so that we could get this thing off the ground. And we had, gosh, I...
Hey, Gordy,
I have it
in the newsletter. There were 30 acts. 30 acts, and it raised $600. It was at Freedom House, if anybody remembers Freedom House.
I sure do. And that $30, those 30 acts was a significant number in Madison at that time, and as was $600. We were in hog heaven, as it were.
Peter and Lou Berryman played. A lot of people played. It was just wonderful.
That's right. But after that, there were a lot of people that came to that weren't necessarily performers that thought, hey, this is pretty cool, and I want to get involved. So as we kept having meetings, there were more and more people that were getting involved. And so once we opened several months afterwards, that group of 12 or 20 or whatever it was had expanded at least doubled or more.
And like WART, there were businesses involved that decided that they would like to help, and there were
Steep and Brew was the coffee place.
And there were different organizations that wanted to help as organizations, sending representatives to do this or that. It's sort of like WART, except very smaller, but it was nice. We have to take another break, so if you guys want to take a small break, I'm just bring Stacy into things and ask all you guys out there for some money, please.
Yes, and we have another person to thank.
Oh, thanks. Okay.
Yeah, Steve Tesmer called in, and he said, say hi to all the Wild Hog folks. So hi to you, Steve. Thank you so much for supporting the Access Hour.
Steve
also is a friend of Back to the Country, Mud Acres, and A Public Affair. He's also a returning donor to the WORT community radio station. And I think that it's great when people continue to give and continue to support, but I might challenge also, if there's a first-time listener out there, to give us a call and see what it's like to donate and to support for WORT. It feels really good. It feels really good to invest in this community radio station. And of course, there are wonderful premiums, gifts that you can get in exchange for your donation. Speaking of cooperatives, at the $50 level, you can get a coupon book called Me Go Green, and it's Greater Madison's Path to Living Green. It's a green savings guide, so you get coupons from a veritable slew of green-oriented of business, businesses and organizations, including the Willie Street Co-op and other places like the Trek Bicycle Store and the TerraSource Gourmet Chocolates and others. And what a cool way to celebrate green living and that concept, that cooperative concept that is so rooted in Madison culture. And that's also reflected in this radio station. So we hope that you'll give us a call at 256-2001. You can donate online at WORT-FM.org. Or if you're outside of the Madison area, you can call 1-866-899-WORT. That's 9678.
Now, we understand that Monday evenings are a slow time. It's a time when we're in the middle of the public information block that goes from 5 to 8, and people listen to that while they're cooking, while they're cleaning up the dishes and things like that. We know you're out there doing that sort of thing, but we do appreciate your listening, and we do actually need to get you to help us to pull our own weight here on this program in the WRT schedule and help to raise the money to support the station. The tower rental costs money. The electricity bill is out of this world. Mm-hmm. The phone bill is interesting. There's a lot of things that have to be taken care of here at the station, and we would like to make sure that the Access Hour is a full part of the contribution. What am I saying?
Well, no, you're right. It's expensive to run the station. It costs over $600,000 a year just to run this. And anybody in the radio business might think, hey, that's a bargain. But all you have to do is just give us a call. I think if we had three more callers tonight, we could probably reach our goal. So why don't you be one of those three and give us a call at 256-2001 and help contribute to what makes the station go. It's not just the listener sponsor gifts, but it's all of the volunteers that make this place run. And you get the most bang for your buck. Your investment goes so far in your community to keep this radio station going, you know, and be a part of this great WORT family with all of the volunteers and all of the support, all of the events, all of the news, all of the music, all the wonderful things that you get from your community radio station. And the Access Hour is definitely one of the highlights. It's one of the freest, most open platforms for our community to get on here and say their views, to share what they want to share. It's been such an honor for me to be on the Access Hour three times, sharing music that I love.
Over 3 years, not three.
Over 3 years, that's right. I do it once a year, and it's so much fun to be able to get on the mic and to, you know, share some music and just be a part of what goes on here at WORT. So please give us a call at 256-2001.
You reminded me of two things. One is that we do have a modest goal, and it is modest, and that was what I was leading up to when I lost my train of thought and fell into the wallowing. It's really a very modest goal. It won't take many people for us to reach that goal, but we do need more of you to call in, please.
And the lines are open, so please give us a call.
256-2001. The other thing is, the Access Hour is really WORT in microcosm. Mm-hmm. Everything that's happening on WORT and the schedule throughout the whole time has the potential, if it hasn't already done it, happen. It has the potential to happen on the Access Hour in a different sort of a way. Someone from the community coming in to do things. Not sometimes it's a volunteer here who does something totally different on the Access Hour because they didn't have a chance to do it where they volunteer. But there are a lot of possibilities here, and a lot of different people from different parts of our listening area have participated. People from up north, Baraboo, Wisconsin, Dallas, people from out west toward, toward Blue River even, that far. There are people that have come up from Illinois. And certainly Janesville and places like that. So it's really, and of course Madison. So we really do have a really interesting organ here at the station that can help make this as community a radio station as any community radio station could be.
That's right. We do have a very far reach here. And I do love being able to drive all the way up to Baraboo and still be able to tune in. So WORT reaches far. It brings in people from all over our community, not just on the Access Hour, but through all the quality programming that you have here on your community radio station. So we hope that you'll be a listener sponsor and give us a call right now. Be one of those three, and I bet we can still make our goal tonight. 256-2001. If you're an old Wild Hog fan, call in and show your support, and we'd love to have you be a part of the program tonight.
Or if you're a member of any co-op that is finally learning something about how the co-ops are being organized or how they've served all of us, please give us a call. It's 256-2001 and 866-899-9678, which spells 899-WORT. And we're going to go back to the program now. And this is a very weird program because I'm actually participating in it. So it's very difficult for me to say, now we're going back to the program. But We're going to do that now, and then Stacy and I will be back to hopefully thank some people at the end of the hour. But we will be counting on you to call us at 256-2001. Back to the program. I have with me here Gordy Hinners from Asheville, North Carolina, who used to be from around here. And he's a professor down in Mars Hill College, I guess.
Yep.
And we have Debbie Kometz, who is works over at the Wisconsin Humanities Council, used to be at the State Historical Society, and was the original founder of the Coffee House. And Michelle Miller, who works at the Center for Integrated Ag Systems at the university and has, I believe, a very long family tradition in co-ops. Is that right?
Yeah, we go way back. turn of the century, my ancestors were involved in setting up co-ops. Most of my people came from North Dakota and had set up a very rural area without electricity, without telephone, without banking services, all those things. And they set up co-ops as in their communities to serve them as they needed. And those co-ops still exist today, just like here in Madison. They're very tenacious organizations, and that they're able to bring the values of the members into their business and provide a service that's needed. And when the needs for the service change, so does the business. And that's how one way that they're able to really, you know, maintain over the long haul.
So when you say your family's, it goes back from time immemorial. How did you get involved in?
I had the good fortune of participating in Wisconsin Farmers Union Youth Program, and that youth program is very much focused on helping kids learn how to start co-ops.
Kids, this is good.
So at our co-op camp up on Lake Wissota, Camp Kenwood, we actually started a candy co-op every time we'd have a camp session. So we'd have to sell shares, we'd have to elect a board of directors, we'd choose a camp name, we'd set prices, we'd have a board that would, you know, kind of run the store. We'd hire people to actually be in the store during breaks to sell candy and ice cream and pop. I think the treats are healthier now, but they weren't back then. And then, and then the accountant of the co-op, the person we hired to be the accountant for the candy co-op, would then tell us how much money we made at the end of the session, and then all the members would get to vote on where to send that money, what nonprofit we wanted to support with that money.
Junior achievement.
Oh, sorry,
yeah.
Stacy.
No, that's why.
Junior achievement, except it was cooperative.
Yeah,
yes.
That's cool.
And we did that from the camp starts at 8 years old and it goes to 18. Did it every summer. It's a breeze. Starting a co-op is not hard at all. I think the hardest parts are pulling people together and getting people on the, you know, with the same vision and the same recognizing what their needs are and being willing to work together to do that. But once you've got that piece of it, then it's just a matter of, you know, finding a location and finding capital to do the business that you want. Many of you might be familiar with the effort to start a co-op food store on Monroe Street here in Madison. And the problem that they had capital, they had people, volunteers, they had the whole thing together. The only thing they couldn't do was get an actual location on Monroe Street. And I understand that was the main impediment to starting that food co-op. So,
wow. So if you wanted to start a co-op, you can. Do you have to go any place? Do you have to start with some sort of paperwork, some form, or do you just? We are now a co-op.
That's a really good question. I don't know why you would have to do it formally, but I'm sure that it helps to do it formally for tax purposes. That's when you start really plugging into that, and you have to have your
articles of incorporation and bylaws, and you incorporate.
Right.
Or not.
Right. I think that's only for tax purposes that you really need to incorporate.
That's interesting. I think that's why the Coffee House Incorporated was pretty much so that we could, I mean, not tax purposes, but it was so that we could operate in the world of business.
Yes.
As ignorant and novicial as we were. Mm-hmm. Is that a word?
I remember walking into the bank to set up the checking account for the Wild Hog when we first did so, the woman asked, her, what's the name of the organization? And we said, well, it's the Wild Hog of the Woods Coffee House, which took up most of the top of the check when we when the checks were finally printed, but the banker just kind of rolling her eyes at the time, but agreeing to go along just the same. But I think part of that was because we had gone through the process of actually being an official organization that that was in business.
And the coordinating committee was something that we set up, that it was part of the requirements of incorporation, was to have a board of directors.
Yes.
Board of directors. So we had a chief executive and a board of directors, but the board of directors was a coordinating committee, mm-hmm. which actually operated in the same, that was really the heart of the co-opness of the cooperativeness of the organization. So.
That's right. And that coordinating committee was charged with basically all of the responsibility of running the coffee house and making any kinds of decisions, whether from the cost of getting in for the night to where we were going to buy coffee, even. And so that kind of decision-making, that kind of power structure was spread out among those people that had volunteered to help run the coffee house.
And at any coordinating committee meeting, I think you couldn't tell who was on the coordinating committee and who wasn't, because everybody just participated.
Absolutely.
Do you have something to say, Devin?
No, I was just saying, when you read the bylaws were structured really strongly that the power of the organization lie with members, and then the members would elect the coordinating committee. But at any time, there were all these safeguards in there, lest the coordinating committee would get out of control, that if the members, got together and, something the coordinating committee had decided could be overturned. I mean, it's very interesting to read the bylaws now and see all the safeguards to ensure that it was the membership that really had the control of the coffee house.
That's one of the things about co-ops in general, is that usually there's three bodies that kind of hold the values of the business. That one is the general manager, whoever, I don't know what the equivalent would be with Wild Hog, and then the board of directors, and then the membership. And that's common to all co-ops.
I guess the general manager would be more like a secretary treasurer in our case.
Yeah.
The person.
And in fact, there was almost not a general manager.
Yeah.
Yeah. There were different people that were charged with carrying out certain functions, whether it was booking the acts or making sure there was food or coffee or staffing the sound booth or manning the front table or whatever it was. There was no one person that was charged with making sure all of that functioned well. And that was kind of one of the interesting things, I think, about this particular group, was that we all agreed that we would prefer to make a lot of those kinds of decisions together.
I just got a note from a Wild Hog person to remind us to say that there is a celebration coming up on November 7th, 8th, and 9th, which is a whole weekend celebration. The whole year has had sort of events about this 30th birthday, but this is going to be a big weekend. And the note says that KG and the Ranger and Roxanne Neat will be playing on Friday, November 7th at Wild Hog. They happen to be the people who played the very first two nights that the coffee house ever opened.
Roxanne
played the first night, and KG and the Ranger, her KG, Karen Gogolik, played the second night along with some other people. So there's going to be a reprise on November 7th. And then the next day, Saturday, there's going to be a Lollapalooza barn dance at Grace Episcopal Church, and three bands are going to play. Bill and Colleen Foley and Sally Bennett are going to start the evening, and Bill and Colleen Foley played the first barn dance for the coffee house. Then Rattle Trap String Band's going to play the second big section of that night, and then the third section is going to be Keith Fletcher, who's flying in from Maine, and Roger Diggle and Mike Bell, who's just a terrific mandolin player. Mm-hmm. So that's going to be a big dance night. There's going to be some workshops in the afternoon. And then on Sunday, we're going to have a brunch at the Wilmar Neighborhood Center, where the coffee house is now. And hopefully Willie Street Co-op's going to cater it. So thanks to Jamie for this reminder that there's celebrations coming up. And this is very important. Members are important to WORT. They're important to places like Wild Hog in the Woods. And it always these places always need new members. WORT needs new members. Wild Hog needs new members. Come on the 7th, 8th, and 9th and join. And call WORT now and make a contribution.
I joined about 3 weeks ago, about a month ago. I'd not been a member for 10 or 15 years. So, time to join. Stacy, we have some news. Is that right? We're getting near the end of the hour.
We're almost at the end of the hour, so I want to jump in with a couple of quick thank yous. Jessica Baker called in, or Becker called in with her support, and she got the last Michael Franti CD. So,
thanks,
sorry, folks, if you were hoping to get that. Got to call in faster next time. And then the announcement came in from Jamie Poindexter along with that contribution. Jamie said that more folk music is always good, and I agree. And this is where you can get your folk music and your Access Hour and your news here on WORT. And we're so close to our goal. I bet if we have just one more phone caller, just one more person to give us a call at 256-2001, I bet we can still make our goal tonight in support of this fantastic Access Hour. So just to wrap up, Ashley, Basha, Graham, and Dave, thank you so much for your phone answering, and thanks to Dobon for the food, and we'll wrap up this Access Hour. Please call 256-2001.
Anybody want to say final things before we wrap up the program part of the Access Hour tonight?
You go first, Michelle. I've been talking a lot.
I was just thinking how fun it was to sit here and hear the history. I mean, you guys were all about 10 years older than me, and you know, I was kind of a high school kid watching all this happen with Wild Hog, and it was really interesting to hear the history of it.
It was long and tedious doing some of it.
Well, it was long and tedious and yet kind of fun and exciting all at the same time.
That's true.
I'd like to just say that it's kind of humbling, really, to be part of Wisconsin's co-op history. And I think of the people out in Westby that was, you know, co-op city in the 1930s. There were actually people who came from Washington, D.C. and did documentaries about Westby in the 1930s as co-op city. And all the people up north that have formed co-ops and places that you go today, it's the telephone cooperative is there. The electric co-ops are there. All the farm co-ops. And to just be a part of that bigger co-op, I don't even know, experience is humbling, and it's really an honor.
We really are a very, very small part, just a piece of the population. It's kind of neat. I want to thank you, Debbie Kometz, for being on the program, for doing this, and Michelle Miller, thanks again. And Gordy Hinners, thanks for hanging on the phone for so long. It's a long time to have a phone next to your ear.
My pleasure.
Thanks very much. And I want to just say that the music that's been sort of trickling in and out of the program all along is music played by John Fabke of WORT and Dave Fallow. They're just playing guitar, and to be honest, I think that somebody just recorded them one night while they were playing. And
Dave was involved in that first
he was.
Blog benefit as well.
He was. That's right. Okay. Well, thanks very much. I think we have to wind up the program. Stacy?
Hey, thanks again to all of our donors tonight, to Jamie, Jessica, Steve, and Harry. We appreciate your support, as we appreciate the support of all our listener sponsors. Thanks again for tuning in.
And if you can still get it to you, if you can still get to a phone, 256-2001 to help us reach our modest goal, that would be very, very nice. We would appreciate it a great deal, because it's always very, it feels good to have the program pull its own weight in the WRT schedule. It's very important. Thanks again.
Thank you for listening to this free program provided by WORT Community Radio in Madison, Wisconsin. Become a listener sponsor. Donate to WORT online at WORTFM.org or call 608-256-2001 during business hours.